connoisseurs of good, informed entertainment everywhere, join Alex Lefchuk and the Midweek Drive team for the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Thank you. In the studio, as you've already heard, if you're with us before the news, Mary Dancy and Claire Marjorison. Yay! And Richard Fitzwilliams up next.
Everything is great. Everything is grand. I got the whole wide world in the palm of my hand.
Everything is perfect. It's falling into place. I can't seem to wipe this smile off my face.
Life's a happy song, and there's someone by my side to sing along.
When you're
right in front of you, nothing's stopping you. Nothing that you can do that the world can throw at you. Life's a happy song.
When there's someone by your side to sing,
life's a happy song.
When there's someone by your side to sing,
life's a happy song. When there's someone by your side to sing along.
Always like a big finish at the start of the programme, really. I think it works so well. Good morning, Jane Southall. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Chief Executive Officer, Director of the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society, and it's another Lincolnshire Agricultural Society special takeover of the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
It is, yes.
Excellent. I already got the excitement that in January already, we've got another Arthur Swallow's Sunday Antiques Market taking place there. And then, of course, the Lincolnshire Business Expo on the 21st of January.
Yeah, the Business Expo, and that's going to be a good one.
It's been absolutely sensational. Quick weather check. Today, highs of 14 degrees centigrade, lows of 10 degrees centigrade. It's going to be very mild, but there will be a dry and bright morning with some hazy sunshine going through the clouds. Excellent. So, last night, as you know, Tara Bennett, thumbs up to Star Wars, The Force Awakens. We also read out, as we felt it was only our duty to do, Richard Fitzwilliams, an official line on that. This morning, he's already in the Force to be with you. You've already been woken up by an overeager friend who effectively sort of said, it's great, at 3 a.m. in the morning.
Yep.
Please. In the words of William Shatner from another franchise entirely, get a life, you know. I mean, it's just but I suspect, Richard Fitzwilliams, that you may just be saying, it's just start with the heck with Prince William getting oversight over government documents.
Well, frankly, I mean, I was doing a couple of pieces about, it was at the time, yesterday, it wasn't known Prince William saw them, but Prince of Wales sees government papers. I mean, as though this was some, you know, something dramatic.
It's a shock, major shock.
I mean, this has been happening.
Even Prime Ministers have not been known to see government papers, I believe.
Junior Ministers possibly not, but this has been happening for the royal family for about it was thought possibly a century. It could have been put in place, it was thought, for George V. And certainly we know that the Prince of Wales, later Edward VIII, took precious little interest in cabinet papers and used to spill whiskey on them. I mean, this was one of the complaints made against him, and it was quite interesting that this is a complete non-news story. It really,
but
really...
Richard, when has that stopped journalists getting to work? Really, I mean, Jane,
non-news
story. Really, just let's go with it. You know,
yeah, we get them all the time. Well,
precisely.
Pressure Group Republic are keen. They're keen to get any link between the royal family and the government. And
well, that's because they're the old republic, and it's the Empire striking back, Richard.
it's interesting that, I mean, just to mention some of the influences that Star Wars has actually had since that famous 1977 movie, The New Hope, it of course was christened. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt the evil Empire and May the Force Be With You have entered the English language, but it's quite extraordinary if you actually read back before Jaws and Star Wars. Releases in the summer in the United States were relatively sedate affairs in a few cinemas. Mm. I mean, it completely revolutionized that. And not only that, of course, Star Wars launched the science fiction blockbuster. I have to say, I think we probably got too many, but it is the genre which is, well, it's the dominant one, I think, at the moment. And there's no doubt that too was a legacy. As for the merchandise, I mean, you could give lectures on it.
I'm still waiting for the action figure of Jane Southall, which I think is needed.
I think that needs to be happening.
Have you? I mean, Alex, I have to ask, frank question. Is there a Princess Leia doll in the office?
No.
It's what we are lacking.
Apart from Mary Dance, of course, who's pretty close, but without the sort of bangs. And although she is dressed in the slave girl costume from Return of the Jedi today, so it's very important. So when you actually sort of set
the enthusiasm, you know, one of the aspects of this, entirely apart from the movie, which obviously we'll discuss, but one of the things that I'm especially interested in promoting, and that is going to the cinema, having a good time, it's something special about it. I say this because of the threat. There is a threat from Netflix.
You just will not let the Netflix thing lie, will you, Richard?
Well, I mean, it's not so much a question of letting it lie, but it's
not a threat.
But if you go to the Empire in Leicester Square, which is where I was for the critic screening of Star Wars: The Force Awakens, the facts are that you've got a vast IMAX screen. They really have revamped it because it's felt that the cinema should offer something more.
Let me just roll back the hours then, Richard. You're sitting there, you're sort of waiting, obviously, with other critics who are actually around. I presume that unlike some of the critical screenings I've been to, there's more than just yourself in the audience. It can happen. It's like a screening at sci-fi.
I think no seats.
No seats available.
Well, there were stormtroopers around. I mean, there have been seats available.
you're sort of umming and ahhing, do I get my mobile phone out to actually take in a little illegal copy of the movie to actually download, and you think, no. So and then this happens.
No, but you don't.
What was the sort of sense of anticipation? Was it a case of, it's just like Lawrence of Arabia come to life in all four force?
You know, the cheering and the clapping. Oh. I mean, there was a sense, firstly, with those who remembered the early movies.
Jane, do you remember the 1977 Star Wars? I can scarcely believe you were actually around at the time.
Well, I was around, but I do remember the Star Wars years ago. I don't sort of... there's a lot of people have grown up with it, haven't they, really? Mm. And it's quite important to them, yeah, so... Mm.
Well, and if they didn't grow up with it at the time, remember it was re-released 20 years later and held up very well.
Yes.
With added effects. And then they brought Jar Jar Binks into the room. And
I don't know, but I mean, we're talking... Once we get to the sequels and the prequels, I think we're on fairly or pretty dodgy ground in some of it anyway. Jar Jar Binks was an absolute catastrophe.
Really?
But I think George Lucas should never have said that he...
How rude! He's a Gungan!
12-year-old when he was making it. I mean, this is a completely new experience. It had to be, but it also had some wonderful nods. There are no spoilers in this, but nods to the past. Harrison Ford as Han Solo, Chewbacca, R2-D2, and also the fact that...
just to point out, actually, it's
really
Peter Mayhew who is Chewbacca. It's not a real character.
generation to get enchanted by it, and some visuals that really are out of this world. I mean, it's very, very well made. It's got a harder, darker edge. It does what some other franchises have not done. I mean, The Hunger Games, The Mockingjay Part 2. Yes, the last hour saved it, and I'd loved the first two, and then they stretched it out for commercial reasons and in a disgraceful way. Spectre, as you know, enjoyable in some ways, but mechanical. It could have done so much more with it. I mean, here J.J. Abrams knows what he wants to do. He wants to pay homage to the past, but he also wants an updated movie which will thrill everybody now, and it's precisely what it does. And, I mean, to reveal just a very, very little of the plot, we begin with an attack from the dark side of the Force, which is, of course, the evil First Order, which has replaced the Empire, and subsequently on Jakku planet, we have a disillusioned stormtrooper, Finn, played by John Boyega, with panache, teaming up with the heroine, a scavenger Rey, played by Daisy Ridley, with enormous fire, and getting more of a share of the action, I'm glad to say, aided by a new robot, BB-8, who's extremely cute, to help the resistance, who are fighting the fascistic First Order, who want to annihilate their enemies. And along the way, we have our old friends Han Solo and Chewbacca, and there is a terrific amount to admire in this movie. It's been put together with a flair, especially evident in action sequences. I love it when the camera for example, is positioned behind guns on spaceships, and the way you can actually see the trails of explosive and so forth. It's been emphasized Abrams has used the minimum amount of CGI, because, of course, in 1977 you didn't have the effects that we've seen so often.
You had good British technical work. That was what developed that. And Shane Rimmer. But
still. Well, the word good substitute the word brilliant, I think. I mean, everyone has been thrilled by this movie. And it's interesting, we need these fantasies and myths and legends. I mean, whether it's Robin Hood or the Arthurian legend or the Homeric legends of Troy in past eras. I mean,
or the man from Uncle. But anyway,
or the man from Uncle for some. Certainly, if it's interesting if you look at the Force with the Jedi and the Sith, the fact the Force has such a dark side, and you compare it with, say, the Ring in Lord of the Rings and what that can do to someone, and indeed Harry Potter's personal struggles. The good-evil battle is always with us, and there was an innocence, there was something absolutely sublime, and also there was this adventurous imagination in 1977, and Spielberg always claimed that it was only he at the preview, the famous preview, who saw it had potential. But true or not, there's no doubt that Lucas's brainchild, I mean, it has been amazing.
Richard, at the end of the day, he wanted to make Flash Gordon. It was just a stroke of luck. He said he didn't have the rights to Flash Gordon, so in the he's ended up doing the Star Wars thingy. Even 20th Century Fox weren't that sure, but they at least had backed Planet of the Apes and 2001
Space Odyssey. Well, didn't they? Disney know what they want for this one. There's no doubt
they want lots of money. Anyway, enough of such negative stuff. Let's progress. Jane, will you be going to see Star Wars The Force Awakens?
Possibly not.
Yeah.
Oh dear, dear.
Wrong answer.
No, I think it shows discernment, Jane.
But it is interesting, because even I was listening and some little children were saying what they wanted from Santa, and it was all Star Wars this and Star Wars that. So to think it's been going for so long, and there was people saying they went because they went with their father to the pictures to see it. So that's quite nice, really, that it... And it's great that it has actually lasted as long as it has, really.
It's lasted as long as it has.
Fundamentally, it's not Star Trek.
Those of us who were interested in the original and who loved the original were pretty fed up at times by what appeared as a prequel. But as you say,
You say pretty fed up, the fact that George Lucas had to cope with lines such as "George Lucas raped my childhood," that's probably sort of pretty harsh with respect to.
I don't think that there was very much of that. I think that what we've seen, though, with the whole concept. It's come alive vividly. It's been brilliantly photographed. There's no doubt about it. If I had to nitpick a bit, I mean, they've introduced some new characters. And you do find in the movie, and it's only 2.25 hours, which is a perfect length, really, but perhaps another quarter hour might have been added.
Really?
Characters could have taken a little longer time. Perhaps.
How else could they do the DVD director's cut and other additional facts that will come through, obviously, as the years proceed?
Well,
and
you never know
editions.
How many cuts you can make of a movie. I mean, when it comes to that terrible movie, Alexander, when I was doing research for my Swords and Sandals talk, because Ben-Hur is being remade, coming out next August, and I was looking at some of which this was a real shocker, Alexander. Oliver Stone would not accept failure. He's made 3, the director's cut, the final cut, and the ultimate cut, and I have not made that up. They're all probably pretty terrible. Nothing would persuade me to see
it. It's like Ridley Scott and Blade Runner. It's all kinds of areas there. Claire, I suspect you'll be Star Wars-ing it.
Yes.
When will that be?
I think after Christmas. I think when I come back to Lincoln, I'm probably going to go see it.
Exactly, let's just ease back. And Mary?
I think I'm going to go see it today.
Yes, well, listen, are there going to be seats available, though, where you'll want to see it? Because, of course, as you know, there have been all-night screenings. And,
I think because we're seeing it.
I mean, it is in itself a fantasy, the way this movie is being marketed and sold. But what I'm thrilled about is people are going to see it on wide screens, and the more movies they're enchanted by, the more they'll go and see other good ones, too.
Or you could wait until Star Wars comes to Netflix. Anyway.
that is a thought that the dark side of the
I was looking forward to watching it on a smartphone, actually. Surely that's all sort of essence.
That's the ideal way of seeing a galactic action spectacular.
Precisely.
Absolutely, yes.
Anyway, it's all good, as somebody would want to say, and we're going to be talking more about the wonderful NUS that actually is the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society in a few moments. Richard, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic year with us as far as the Midweek Drive Morning Edition has been concerned?
I most certainly have.
So I take it you'll be with us in 2016, because, of course, over the Christmas period, we'll also probably put together a podcast special. It's the New Year's Honours List thing.
Oh,
so.
Well, yes, and also perhaps if I could say...
I know, Jane, you can't say you've got your damehood as yet.
How about the films of the year as well? Something along those lines.
Well, as long as you don't slag off The Man from U.N.C.L.E. as you did in your cursory comment, which I thought was outrageous, effectively.
Wasn't that outrageous? I gave a sincere view. I have to say, and here's a real tribute to you. When I wrote it, I thought of you.
Oh, there you go.
Well, there you have it, yes. And even sort of saying Tom Cruise's Ghost Protocol was superior to Spectre.
No, it was not Ghost Protocol.
It was
Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. Thrilling.
Yeah. Oh, well. It's a game of opinions. So we will connect with you again in the very near future.
That would be fabulous.
Season's greetings to Richard Fitzwilliam.
Have a good Christmas.
And to
Merry
all
Christmas.
Yes, Merry Christmas.
A spaceman came traveling on his ship from afar. 'Twas light years of time since his mission did start, and over a village he halted his craft, and it hung in the sky like a star, just like a star. He followed a light and came down to a shed where a mother and child were lying there on a bed. A bright light of silver shone round his head, and he had the face of an angel. And they were afraid. Then the stranger spoke.
From the Lincolnshire Show, from the Great Yorkshire Show and onwards, one of the messages that have been coming through when we've been speaking to dairy exhibitors and dairy farmers, etc., is how actually prices were not fair. There were issues relating to that whole factor of things. And indeed, most folk, when actually asked, would say that they'd be prepared to pay more to ensure that the money actually went back to farmers in terms of dairy items and so on. To address this issue and indeed hopefully some good news with respect to farmers and indeed the dairy industry across the base, we're delighted to be able to welcome both ace farmer extraordinaire John Cook. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning. Very well, thank you.
And we also have the fabulous coordinator behind White Wednesday. That will be Sarah Baldwin. How are you, Sarah?
I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent. John, obviously you've been running the Burgate Farm for 40 years together with Sarah. This is it's finally we're getting some good news when it comes to actually producing milk and actually getting a fair price for the milk and product that you're actually getting.
Yes, we most certainly need a slightly better price even what we currently are getting. In Arla, we know that everybody enjoys dairy delights at Christmas time, whether it's a tasty cheese after the Christmas pudding or a nice brandy-laced cream or even a glass of milk to lace the stomach before the festive occasions. And so what we thought, we've launched a campaign to calling on our consumers to get behind the nation's dairy farmers at this key time of year, the countdown to Christmas.
Now, listening to this particular piece, hopefully in the studio we've also got Jane Southall as the Chief Executive Officer of the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society. And clearly this is something which agricultural societies across the country have been getting behind, presumably. Or has it been something of a challenge, sir? I mean, have you sort of found it that in terms of getting White Wednesday together that maybe you have had one or two issues saying, no, we'd prefer to actually stay with the supermarket situation?
So the question, I think, is more around, you know, what we're trying to do to get get consumers to understand more about Arlo, which is Arlo is a cooperative. And I think a lot of consumers, particularly the research that we've done, says that consumers are really interested in buying products from a cooperative and particularly from dairy farmers that own that cooperative.
Absolutely. I mean, if we look at some of the sort of statistics that's actually there, and clearly it's not good if you have any allergies to dairy products, but we do have sort of scenarios where milk cheese is still the most popular dairy product, butter comes up with 72%, double cream and yogurt, and indeed 16% have actually, those surveyed actually in this Arla piece, have actually confessed to leaving a glass of milk out for Santa Claus on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, absolutely. But we need to get a few more people, I think, to leave that glass out for Santa on Christmas Eve and drive a bit more consumption on milk, which is a fabulous nutritional product for Santa as he makes his way around the UK dropping off his presents.
John, we've also seen a shift over the years in terms of obviously different kinds of dairy product. I mean, I'm not sure whether you would incorporate goats in terms of that as well, or is that something which, again, you know, we're seeing a shift in terms of people's tastes? I mean, obviously there's the skimmed, the semi-skimmed, as I say, different species providing milk. I've even heard sheep mentioned in certain instances.
Well, we at Arla, we specialise in milk from dairy cows, but we've increasingly have a large portfolio of products for consumers, because consumers are demanding ever more products. They want them to be safe, healthy, nutritious. And it's our target as a farmer-owned cooperative to ensure that the consumers get what they require.
Looking towards this then, in terms of obviously Burgate Farm near Scarborough and working through that, what's the kind of thing that you would actually want to take as the clear message from this? I mean, we talked about White Wednesday, which should we celebrate it? Should we actually sort of ensure this is a standard thing? It certainly sounds a lot more positive than Black Friday, shall we say.
Well, we no longer seem to get White Christmases anymore, possibly due to climate change. So we at Arla thought we'd celebrate with White Wednesdays, White Milky Wednesdays. It's a nice four-week programme running up to Christmas, highlighting how important the dairy industry is to farmers, and particularly our role in Arla, because we are a farmer-owned cooperative. The farmers, we own it, all the profits go back to us, but we have an interest in the whole supply chain, ensuring that we get the product to the consumer.
Sarah, from your own perspective, I suppose the message is not too dissimilar to that relating to puppies and so on, that a dairy is for life, not just for Christmas, or indeed a lifetime. I mean, from your idea of things, are you seeing an improvement in terms of the message that's getting out there?
Yeah, I think we're seeing a lot of consumers, buy into different areas of dairy, which is really exciting throughout their different life stages. So particularly things like yogurts, we're seeing that focus a lot more in people's diets. Milk still remains the core traditional product of dairy, but we're definitely seeing consumers buying into different areas, which is fantastic because you can keep eating dairy for your whole life. It's brilliant.
And John, any particular aspect of dairy farming that you would say, yes, that's my favourite? Is it a case of the very early mornings that you actually arise to milk the cattle, or is it a case of, no, I prefer the cheese at the end of the production process?
Well, actually, I'm afraid I like both. I love getting up at 3:30, which is when I normally get up, because it's a beautiful time of day. Okay, it's maybe not so nice and warm on a cold day, but in the middle of summer, it's fantastic. And if you're used to working with animals all your life, like I have been, it's always a pleasure to do it, even on Christmas Day. I shall be looking forward to be finished by 10 o'clock to be in my Christmas lunch.
Oh, very good. And Sarah, likewise, a similar question for your good self. Or is it a case of, no, I'm too busy organising the public relations of the rest of the stuff to actually deal with the actual milking and the farming itself?
Oh, no, I absolutely love it. I actually grew up on a dairy farm, so my heart lies in dairy farming, and I'm a bit like John. I would happily be out there in the milking the cows. But funny enough, I still love marketing the products as well, which is a great honour to do it for a cooperative.
Good to hear, Sarah. Finally, how can people actually find out further details? Is it a case of go to the Arla website and find out all the sort of information there? Or is it just a case of support Arla Foods whenever you see them around?
I think all of those, actually. So you can go to www.arla.com. You can also hashtag White Wednesdays, and we'll have lots of farmers and colleagues actually around in some of our towns over the next couple of weeks. And then ultimately, yeah, just keep buying Arla products and supporting the fantastic dairy industry we have in the UK and Europe.
Sarah Baldwin and John Cook, many thanks for actually joining us today, raising some key issues, I think, which certainly resonate with our rural aficionados across the base. And indeed, it's not just for rural aficionados, it's people actually living in towns as well, because there are people, Sarah, amazingly enough, I've met a couple of them from the student perspective, who believe that actually milk comes from supermarkets, not from cows at all.
That's why we need White Wednesdays.
Nervous laughter, obviously. Countryside Links, of course, is the thing to go to if you are interested in finding out about where we get our food and milk and things from, isn't it, Jane?
It is, yes.
You see what we did there? That nice Countryside Links straight into the 10th of April. Tickets already available, presumably, from LincolnshireShowground.co.uk.
Yeah, I'm sure we have tickets available. I mean, it's the second event. We did it last year for the first time, and there was a lot of interest.
There.
Yeah, we were. It rained all day.
I know.
But it's not going to rain this year. So, but yeah, it's a great family day out, and it's we've
we've got lots of sort of zones where children can have a go, see animals, do a bread making, etc. At willow weaving, just more hands-on, really.
Claire, have you been to the Lincolnshire Showground as yet to see? You have not, even as a Harrogate lass who's done the Great Yorkshire Show, you haven't. Yeah.
Well,
you haven't...
I've only done the Great Yorkshire Show once.
Good heavens.
In the, like, many years that I've lived there. Well, so I'm just appalling, really.
So the Lincolnshire Show, part of your midweek drive-out duties, yeah. You know, having joined the team, will obviously entail sort of seeing the joy and
definitely,
wonderment that takes place
definitely.
Up there. Is that right, Jane?
It is, yeah. You can't not have seen the Lincolnshire Show.
Mary Dancy, likewise. Have you Lincolnshire Show?
No, I haven't.
Outrageous. Oh. Yeah, outrageous.
You know, Alice, you need to check people more before you invite me on into the studio.
They come along, they read a degree in English, and then as if I did, Ian Lennox, you're going to say as well, you haven't been to the Lincolnshire Show either, have you?
I haven't even seen the Thumbland Show.
It's outrageous. I mean, for that, I'm always tempted not to read your particular comment, which I found mildly amusing, actually, from the supporter of a side who are now ahead of Chelsea in the league. Yeah, success and joy. I know that America is, in fact, a number of different countries. The trouble is a disconcerting number of them seem to be populated by people who are absolutely mad. This is actually a little slide that has actually got a reporter, I suspect a reporter, because he looks very reporter-esque, turning things to camera. And in the background, we have Trump, Make America Great Again. I thought it was some flatulence aspect, really, that was involved with that. But, there was a case for Star Wars not being real. That's a sort of classic case there. Anyway, Ian, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Good. In the studio, we have... by the way, is it snowing on Tyneside today?
Not yet.
Oh, right. It won't.
Oh, I want it to snow.
We've got a whole winter to wait for, so it will be.
Actually, Jane, you said it was raining last year. We'll probably actually have snow on
countryside. I prefer snow to rain, actually.
Yeah,
me. There we are, yes, exactly. Anyway, we have... We have... You're always so negative here, honestly. That's why we like you. Exactly. You know, you can actually guarantee that it's always going to be half empty when Ian Lennox comes on board, which is important. It's very, very truthful. Jane, Chief Executive Officer of the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society. It's been a good year, hasn't it, 2015?
Yeah, we've had a great year, yeah.
I mean, even though people were saying, how are they going to cope with the maternity leave of
Amelia, yes.
But we have.
We have, yes.
Well, I see you have, actually, and obviously that doesn't mean, Amelia, that she isn't needed. In fact, you know, Sally Mundy's already said, when's she going to come back? But, you know, the team actually sort of held together, and even actually losing such delights as Chloe, of course, who's
Yeah, but we've got Charlie now. You haven't met Charlie yet, have you? And we've Rachel at the moment, who's covering Amelia's maternity leave. And we are a great team, and we do all pull together.
And it comes from the top, of course, Jane.
Of course, you
lead from that sort of basis. In fact, I'm amazed that Roman Abramovich hasn't been in touch with you to actually say, Jane, could you possibly look after the Chelsea Football Club?
Yeah, well, perhaps he just hasn't looked me up yet.
It's a way forward.
Should probably get a trial at Manchester City before then.
Something so funny. Anyway, I'm moving on. Well, Mary Dancy also with us, and indeed, as you've just heard, the wonderful Claire Margerison. Claire, have you got any questions you want to put to Ian about writing and such? I mean, maybe the same sort of question we were thinking about with Jenny Finch yesterday, in terms of what does he do when he basically is given something to write, or how does he actually cope with writer's block?
Do you have any methods for, like, just if you just can't get a single word down, what do you do in that situation?
Well, there's two modes where you're not writing. One is where you're not intending to write, really, you're sort of in between things. And the other is when you're actually in the middle of a project and you can't get started. I have never had this. I've never actually suffered that. One thing that I do is I try and write 500 words a day at least. And I also try and leave a little sort of... I don't sort of end a scene. I stop writing, but just before the end of a scene, so I've got something to start up on straight away. It's like kickstarts me.
That's a very good idea, actually. Like, in terms of, because we obviously, as English students, we do quite a lot of essay writing, and sometimes it's getting the ideas from your head onto paper. And, like, I like the idea of just leaving it just before the paragraphs end, so you have something to start on to get you into the flow of writing again.
Mm. And the other thing is you can do is especially in essays, you can leave out a little structure and you can just write it out, like bullet points, what you're trying to do. Yeah. And that kicks you on as well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this famous writers had terrible trouble trying to, with writer's block. Some never happened, not bothered at all, were never bothered by it at all, but others did. They just, Flaubert once wrote to George Sand, his friend, saying that you've got no idea what the agony of writing one sentence and trying to find the correct word for it.
Yes, but he was French.
Struggling all day to do it.
Yeah, the French like to agonise over the most inconsequential
things. Well, there's some words in French as well, you see, Alex.
So, exactly. Yeah. Gustave. Quel dommage.
Mind you, it worked for him because he was, to my opinion, he's one of the greatest novel writers of all time.
Really?
Oh, yes.
What, ahead of Ray Bradbury?
Come on.
Yeah. See, once again, you pulled it out there. And I bet, Ian, you're not even going to be seeing Star Wars or Force Awakens over the next few days, are you?
Nope.
Yeah, he works his way there. But I know, Ian, you're very keen to find out what Cameron Turbury provided as the last official 2015 Maple Star music from Nashville was going to actually be. Well, it's by Moonlight Social. Are you ready for this one, Ian?
Yes, I am.
And Moonlight Social, of course, Country West Band, it's their version of O Come, Emmanuel.
Oh, come, oh, come, Emmanuel.
Thing that Mike Ashley would appreciate if they sort of sang on the sort of terraces at St. James Park, I would have thought. Anyway, don't let me influence you. Jane, what did you make of Moonlight Social and O Come, O Come, Emmanuel?
Interesting.
Interesting from Jane. There we are, straight in there from that point of view. Mary Dancy?
I'm not the biggest fan. It kind of put me a bit to sleep.
Sleep, yeah. Well, it can be a good thing, I suppose. Yeah. Claire?
I enjoyed it more than I did yesterday.
Yeah.
Like, the harmonies in that, like Sue was saying yesterday, were very, very nice.
Exactly.
So it grows on you.
Yes.
Okay. Indeed. Okay. Like mistletoe, which, of course, is a parasite. But anyway, Ian Lennox.
Well, I must admit, sometimes when you're playing these things over the phone, I turn the phone to my deaf ear. But this wasn't one of them.
Oh.
I quite liked the slow beat.
Yeah.
And I thought, it was distractingly different from most songs you see here at Christmas.
Exactly.
Which is jolly, jolly, happy, jolly.
It's not your style at all.
More atmospheric and reflective.
Yeah, precisely. Did you actually have a little wager that by the time of Christmas that Newcastle United under Steve McLaren would actually be ahead of Jose Mourinho's Chelsea, or was that just a case of in your wildest dreams?
Well, it's not really relevant where Chelsea are. It's where Newcastle are on the table, aren't they?
I don't know. They're ahead of...
We're talking about Newcastle. What? There's rumours going around that Manchester City are going to replace their manager. He's only second or third top of the division.
Yeah, we...
Having won a title last year. It's ridiculous.
What?
What a way to run a bus.
Sometimes you've got to actually, build from success and not just wait until failure comes to worry what's happening. It's quite...
You've won the league, I'm sacking you.
Look,
always
be part of our history and our much important scenario. That's important thing.
Mourinho at Chelsea is probably the most successful manager there's ever been.
He's
had a bad 3 or 4 months and a couple of players don't like him. Oh, get rid of him as well.
Exactly. It's a harsh world, but
Would you like to work in the room? I mean, I know they have big contracts, and Mourinho is reckoned to have signed a contract in August, I think it was, worth 4 or 5 years, worth £40 million.
It's a kind of figure, isn't it, Jane?
Really? Who's really at fault? Is it the bloke who's given the contract for incompetence? Or is it incompetence to sack him after something like that?
Good question, Ian. Jane.
I mean, what would you feel like if you came in one Monday morning? Oh, you're top of the readings.
Yeah.
The second year.
Yeah, well, it happens. And over
no,
to.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does. Jane, what's your views on this particular perspective?
Yeah, I think so. It does seem to be as once the team's not doing well, they just seem to go, don't they, really? And they don't always know who they're going to get replaced, and it doesn't always mean the team's going to do any better. But I think it is a bit like that, and I don't know about the Manchester guy, he's got another plan to move. He's done what he wanted, and he's already got his eyes set on something else. Sometimes that happens.
Always be a place for Pellegrini, that's the important thing. And it's all wonderful. Of course, Jane, no names, but we know you've had to sort of ask people to move on for incompetence, you know. So.
Possibly.
Exactly. We'll go any further, Ian. It's too delicate a subject, but still, I don't know. You're quite right, Jane, by the way. Anyway, that's a different line entirely. Claire, thoughts from yourself?
Yeah, I think that it seems like a bit fishy to me that they would get rid of someone if they're doing well.
A bit fishy.
A bit fishy. It's like a bit of a kick in the teeth, isn't it? By going, oh, you're doing so well, like, oh,
gonna,
have an A, then
we're going to have to let you go.
Yeah.
All works well. And Mary?
Yeah, really what we've all been saying, I suppose. So, yeah, just pretty nasty. Yeah.
Well, that's life up to a point. Anyway, Sheila Jones, who is a management expert and indeed a kind of counsellor of all sorts of things, will be joining us from Goole after the 9 o'clock news. William Sitwell hopefully back with us, and indeed Alan Stevens as well. But Jane, Elton John comes to Lincoln.
He does. Sir Elton John.
Sir Elton John on the 10th of June.
He does, yeah.
2016.
Yes. And the tickets
Are they still available? I would have thought they were all gone by, you know.
Well, they're looking at whether we can increase the capacity, so that's,
To be precise, Ian, this is Elton John's wonderful Crazy Night Tour.
Right.
Yeah.
Crazy Night Tour or Ninth Tour?
No, Night.
Night Tour. Night. One Night in Lincoln.
Yeah, One Night in Lincoln. Who'd have thought it? Although has been pointed out, actually.
But where does the tour come in? He's going to
Leicester, and he's doing Exeter, so he's doing three.
Oh, he's doing that for the old Thomas Hardy country sort of thing.
Yeah.
Interesting.
No, Thomas Hardy? I might have got that wrong. Yes, I think it's Thomas Hardy. Under the Greenwood Tree.
But, I mean, it's great for Lincoln because, you know, it shows what we can do and what we can hold. So hopefully you don't know what else it will bring, really. Yeah.
Yes. Amen. I was having a conversation with some people last night and about the extreme importance of universities in the communities. In Newcastle, we've got one college, another college over the river in Gateshead, and two universities and a number of peripheral colleges. And I reckon there's about 100,000 students coming to our city every year.
Yeah.
And a lot of them stay as well when they get the degrees. So you have the injection of intelligence into the community. But also you have this huge spending power that could boost the community. And I think it's the actual fact that you have universities and colleges in a city is probably it's becoming increasingly important. And
well,
I don't know how many universities Lincoln's got. But
we have two.
Yeah, you've got the number of students who come in every year because...
I don't really have time, actually. I'm spending too much
time.
No,
you haven't, and you've run out of fingers very quickly.
Well, there you are, exactly. You know, it's a numeracy thing. It's all very confusing. But, of course, yes, tell that to the Secretary of State for Higher Education. Anyway, that's a different line entirely. Ian, what Elton John tune would you like us to see if we can actually wrap up with for today? What Elton John classic tune would you like to actually go out with you? Bear in mind, obviously, Elton John's wonderful Crazy Night Tour at the 10th of June. Will this be inside or outside?
It's outside. It's all suited outside.
Right.
2 weeks before the show.
Have you heard the one about
the Pinball Wizard?
Pinball Wizard.
We do have Pinball Wizard, yes. Is that the one you're actually going for?
That's all I remember, so I'll have to.
Well, then, all right, we could Tiny Dancer, Honky Cat, Rocket Man, Crocodile Rock, Lucy in the Sky with
Rocket
Diamonds.
Man's a good one.
Well, there
especially
we are.
In view of the doing it to space by our truck.
Oh, yes, that'll be celebrating that. Yeah.
So, Claire, would you like to put those last two questions to Ian after another year of successful contributions in a slightly kind of irritated way, apart, of course, from the 2 months he spent in Canada?
Yes. Ian, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us?
Oh, yes, I have.
Year?
I was. Enjoy taking the mic out of Alex.
good, good. It's the way, isn't it? And will we be joining? Will you be joining us again next year as well?
I hope so. I'm invited back.
Absolutely, he will be coming back, and we can look forward to more Ian Lennox. And in case if you're wondering, of course, you can use podcasts to actually download a whole stack of Ian. In fact, probably, and if you calculate all of the Ian Lennox podcasts, you've got about 24 hours worth there, so you can actually have non-stop Ian Lennox should you wish.
I can see a sale. Yeah.
Exactly. A few words from John Wenham's events diary up next, but as requested.
She packed my bags last night, pre-flight. 0 hour, 9 a.m. And I'm gonna be high as a kite by then.